Welcome to the Clam Jammers Podcast, the semi-erotic podcast exploring the strange world of smut and kitsch in all its forms. Welcome to the world of Shore, Miri, and put upon Penguin Crabsworth as they play, chat, and laugh their way through all of life's intimate topics. Come for the sex, stay for the weird.
Hello, shiny, happy people. It is I, Miri, with my special, special co-host guest, Little Crabsworth Nathan.
Hello, everyone. I want you all to know that I blew off fried chicken for this because this was in my schedule to come and talk to you people today. And I do not know why I'm bringing up personal crap, but do you want to know what? If I have to blow off fried chicken for this, you have to hear about it, yeah.
I'm sorry. We should have canceled.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
It's fine for a multitude of reasons. There's nowhere I'd rather be than right here about to get the holy crap roasted out of me.
So
to be burned in oil and deep fried myself with, instead of my lovely black coat, I've got a nice golden coat. And hopefully I can make some little orphan child very happy because that's all Miri thinks I'm good for. So
so bit of a teensy weensy surprise. As we were recording this, it is the end of January.
Yes.
And I have to do a bit of a backup episode because obviously, sure, life kicking her in the butt. So Little Crabsworth Nathan thought we were recording one thing. We're not, we're recording two things. So we're going to start off with the most painful part, which is another Miri reviews a sex book.
Oh, God, no. No. Okay. Is this as bad as the last Miri reviews a sex thing that we did?
Well, see, the thing that we did that time was parody. This is the real thing, baby.
There's
no parody here.
Oh, does that mean that I have to be serious? Because, you know,
I
don't do that. I'm not like Shore. I cannot get deep into the author's urgent craving to be double fisted in the back of an Arby's. I don't know why Arby's, but hey, they make great curly fries and affordable roast beef sandwiches in this economy. Arby's, you're the real ones.
So this is a full trilogy. This is the trilogy.
Oh,
this is the trilogy Secret, which is actually in this book an acronym.
Oh my God, no.
Now, this book is this trilogy. So we have Secret, Secret Shared, and Secret Revealed. And what this trilogy does is you have your main character in the first one, and then her story continues in the second and third. However, you have a new person introduced in the second book and we're following her plot line and her sexcapades there. And then in the third one, we have yet another woman and we follow her sexcapades as well. And this is how you get the variety in terms of ethnicity, sex, types of relationships, things like that, body types as well.
Perfect. Quick question.
Yes.
Because I know this was originally planned for Shore and life is kicking her in the butt, I have to know, because Shore's favorite series from what you've described to me and my limited interactions with Shore is Twilight. Is this like Twilight with sexcapades?
No. So.
Okay, but are there werewolves involved? Because I know it's a...
No. So what is fun about this trilogy, I'll tell you, is I believe it came out after 50 Shades. And what happened with 50 Shades was we can all admit it is poorly written fan fiction. We can all say that it is poorly written fan fiction. That's what
we
it
can.
Is. Yes, we can all say that. I couldn't get past the first page. I thought it was horribly written. Anyway.
I don't know. Gilbert Gottfried. Man, that man.
You know what? I didn't hear his full version. Maybe if I was listening to him read it and not reading it myself, it would have been better. Anyway.
That's what a good voice actor does for you, folks.
What ended up happening was a bunch of romance / erotica novelists who've been doing it for a long time. They're insulted. They're like, what the fuck is this? So then you ended up with a bunch of Spite trilogies coming out. Now, it is not confirmed if this is the original Spite trilogy. I have a different one that I'm getting secondhand to review that I do believe is the Spite trilogy, where it was like, I can write this way better than you, E.L. James. So, but this one is a bit special in the sense that it combines a lot of stereotypical things that you see in these erotica novels. For example, kinky sex, 50 Shades. It is set in New Orleans. Well, guess what author who writes a lot of vampire stuff, but also a lot of sexy stuff? Anne Rice sets a lot of her stuff. Well, she set a lot of her stuff, sorry, in New Orleans. So this is set in New Orleans. We've also got, I can't remember his name, but one of the minor characters in this is international playboy millionaire who obviously wants a submissive girl and oversteps boundaries. Over the course of the three novels, he gets rejected. He tries to abduct one of the women in the second book. And then the third woman, she's a prominent anchor in New Orleans, and she wants an interview with him, and he won't do it. And he instead tries to assault her, and she kicks his ass. And then apparently from there, he learns his lesson, and he apologizes to all the women of secret and gives them all this money and blah, blah, blah. But it was very obviously a reference to Christian Grey, whether or not the author would admit it. Now, another fun fact about this. So this is written by L. Mary Adeline, which is actually the pseudonym for Canadian author Lisa Gabriel. So we've got a Canadian series going on here. So because these are actual sex scenes, I can't read them out loud to you. But that's not the point of my torture here today. The point of my torture here today is this has masterfully created a trio of soap operas. And if I know you, I know you love relationship drama.
Oh, absolutely. That is just my bread and butter all the way through.
Yeah.
Now about these sex scenes, just so everybody knows, the reason that you're not saying them out loud is because they are so lewd and dramatic and amazing and sexual and erotic. Because this guy Eli isn't here is the reason that you're not doing this, right?
Okay. Obviously, there's also another reason. I get really annoyed with people who play up kinky sex when I'm like, this is regular sex with sprinklings on top. And that's simply because I interact with people on a regular basis who are into sideshow body modification stuff. That is hardcore kink play that they do, and I hear about this stuff. So to me, I'm like, you're not even giving me the details on the bondage. You just were like, she was strapped and blindfold went on and she was ready for pleasure. Cut scene. Now we're like completely, you're not giving me details.
He buried his massive junk into a velvety underground and thrusted harder and harder until sprinkles came out.
Exactly. We're missing those details in some of the sex scenes. But what I will say is the relationship between people having sex is quite well done. So I'll say that. But I'm here to torture you. So we're talking about the relationship drama. So are you ready to dive in?
Oh my God, I'm like so ready.
Okay. So what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be reading the backs of the novels. And as I'm reading them, I'm going to comment on the actual relationship drama that's going on. So,
okay. So what exactly do you need me to do? Just like sit here and
be tortured.
Okay, perfect.
You know, say how much you love it. Maybe say that you're disdained. I don't know, but something
okay, perfect,
like that.
Perfect. Perfect. But you just want my live reaction to this. That's what I'm trying to. Okay.
So, Casey Robichaud's life has been filled.
Sorry to anybody who's named Robichauds. I just think that's funny, especially.
Has been filled with regret and loneliness since the death of her husband. Check, she's a widow. She waits tables at a rundown Cafe Rosé in New Orleans. Check, hard worker in an exotic location, but it's a rundown cafe. Just every night, she heads home to her cat and solitary one-bedroom apartment.
Wow.
This is like that part in It's a Wonderful Life where she's a librarian who's single.
Okay. I have to ask. So the one-room apartment, because obviously you've read the books.
Yes.
Is it like the most budget one-bedroom apartment I can think of? Or is it actually, you know, good?
It's good. She lives in the French Quarter.
Okay, so then you can't just say she's a normal, average, lonely, single girl.
Here's the interesting thing. If you actually look at rental prices in the French Quarter in New Orleans, they're actually quite low, which is interesting to me. But I suppose that has to do with, like, the sound, the ambiance of living there. So,
especially around a certain time of year.
Yeah. Also, New Orleans is one of the states where you have to say whether or not a place is haunted. So, you know, if it's haunted, you might be able to get an even better deal. So, I think it is established, though, that she has some insurance money from the death of her husband. She's got some money squirreled away.
Okay.
That's her retirement fund, you see, because, you know, waitress in a rundown Cafe Rosé in New Orleans. So one day, one of her customers comes in. It's this effervescent woman. And she, obviously, I'm not reading the back. With a man, and they're flirting. And she's just like, I wish I had that. Like, I miss that. I miss having this. And the woman leaves behind a journal. So Cassie, you know, maybe there's a phone number. Maybe there's, like, I can contact this person. And so she flips through the notebook, and something catches her eye. And she reads it, and then she slams it shut. This is the sexual diary of the diary owner. And so she takes it home, and then she reads more of it. And then she feels wrong for reading it, but also something sparking in her. And these, what is it? When she discovers a notebook left behind by a mysterious woman at the cafe, Cassie's world is forever changed. The notebook's stunningly explicit confessions shock and fascinate Cassie. And in the process of returning this, she is introduced to the Women of Secret, an underground society dedicated to helping women realize their wildest and most intimate sexual fantasies on an estate. A New Orleans estate, you see, run by an older woman, and they're all women. They've created this kind of society, and each year they pick a woman who they think can go through their 10-step program to these custom erotic experiences so that they can, you know, find the sensuality within themselves and stuff like that. So as she immerses herself in the electrifying 10-step journey through a series of rapturous fantasies with gorgeous men who awaken and satisfy her like never before. So she has this flirtatious thing going on with the owner of the cafe, Will, but he's dating one of the other waitresses.
Oh, of course he is. That bitch.
Yeah. God. And so there's a younger bad boy Jesse, who's one of the men she gets to meet. She gets to have the Cinderella experience with our knockoff Christian Grey. Obviously that happens. She goes away on vacation for, you know, some reason, somehow comes into money for this vacation or wins a vacation, whatever, to skiing in Banff. And she has a sexual experience with somebody. There's a rescue fantasy that happens where she is on a boat in the middle of a hurricane coming in. And this guy saves her. And, like, they shack up in his smaller tugboat. That happens. Like, it's, these are wild. By the way, this is all funded by the Women of Secret selling art by this artist whose estate they're on. And that's how they fund it. Meanwhile, in the back of my mind, I'm going, why wouldn't you roll this into like a investment account and yeah, use something the dividends that
grows over
it.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah. Like why sell off all this art? But I think it's to create tension because through the three novels, they're running out of paintings. They can only do this so long. Knock off Christian Grey is coming for them. Don't you know?
And when he gets here, oh my heavens, girls, all petticoats for yourselves.
So this is before Knockoff Christian Grey shows his true colors. So at the end, she does this Gasper-esque performance. I know.
Oh, the horror.
And Will is freshly broken up. So Jesse, Will, and Knockoff Christian Grey are in the audience. Oh, and no. She gets to pick who she's having this final 10th experience with.
But obviously is it like a choose your own adventure?
Yes, it is. She obviously picks Will. They have an impassioned night. And meanwhile, he has plans to, he is going to be renovating the upper level of the Rose Cafe to make it into like fine dining New Orleans type stuff. So they wake up the next day. His ex calls him. She's pregnant.
Oh.
So Cassie is left aside and we get into secrets shared. Still heartbroken over her boss and lover. By the way, she can't leave her job. She is still working there.
She's still working for him.
Of course he is. Heartbroken after the...
But the relationship has changed.
Yes.
Oh, the horror. Will, this is so lewd.
Cassie throws herself into secret. The mysterious organization that changed her forever by bringing her deepest sexual fantasies to life. Now it's Cassie's turn to guide the group's newest candidate, Daphne Mason. Now, Daphne Mason, it's a little unknown her ethnicity, but she's... No, it's not unknown. I just can't remember it. But she's what we would call voluptuous even... redhead, but there's obviously like, you know, she's comes off as biracial. What
okay,
races,
you,
we
you,
don't know.
You do you. I'm just going to imagine Daphne Blake from Scooby-Doo.
Sure, go ahead.
Just as I do is...
So, Daphne...
Jesus.
You know, she runs a really hip and trendy vintage shop in New Orleans, but she's kind of, you know, not felt good about herself and things like that. So Cassie sees her and she
is also kind of bored with her job too, I feel like.
No, she loves her job. Don't
she
worry
loves
about
her
that.
Job. Okay.
Yeah. But you know, she's lost the touch. She's 31, so she is younger than Cassie, but she is really into the music scene in New Orleans. And she has a crush on Mark Drury, a local rock star. But she's too shy to put herself out there. So Cassie comes in and sees her and invites her to secret. And she decides to take the dive. She's like, I don't want to be shy anymore. I want to feel like I did before. I had this guy who just would tell me I was fat all the time and ugly and stuff like that. And I think he tried to embezzle money from her as well at one point. Like, that's where we're coming from, Daphne. So she turns to secret to reignite her sexual flame and find the confidence to risk her heart again. So we're watching Daphne goes through this experience. Cassie ends up picking up a man who turns out to be Mark Drury, and she keeps trying to make Will jealous by her going around having sex with guys. Because, you know, she's spiteful. So
you
both,
don't say.
Yeah. Both women navigate the rocky path between their hearts and their passions, hoping to discover what they truly want in life and love. So Daphne ends up having to go to South America, and she has a bisexual experience in a three-way.
No!
But this is where, at the auction house, she is supposed to meet up with a driver. Cue Knockoff Christian Grey abducting her and nearly, like, plundering her body. But she manages to get away. Unfortunately, she thinks she loses the painting. Now, Will has been doing these renos, and he says to Cassie, like, he starts talking about wines and stuff, and she's like, wow, you're going to have a fun time memorizing all of that. And he goes, so will you? She's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, well, I'm going to make you, like, you're going to be the manager, right? So that leads it. So they're still, she kind of ends up stopping with the spite stuff to get Will's attention. She's like, I'm not doing this. I'm going to, you know, be an adult. And she decides to put her savings in with Will, which helps him out because turns out he doesn't have enough money to finish the renos.
Oh, no.
Meanwhile, the baby. It's not his. And his girlfriend runs off with the baby's father, leaving him kind of really, really broken. So they go to reignite, and there's this big benefit auction that's happening at the end of the book with Daphne. So Mark ends up getting into Secret, and he's going to be like trained up to give Daphne this awesome experience. And so there's an intimate setting at a concert. She's in the front row and he's singing all the songs to her, takes her with him backstage. They go into this whole impassioned like thing. They wake up the next day, you know, they've had sex multiple times. Obviously. And they go to Secret and they're like, we're both out. We're happy with this relationship. We're happy with each other. We're like, oh, they're together now. So they're going to the benefit too.
Wait. Secret organization is not spiteful that somebody's leaving it?
Nope. They're happy.
Oh, completely against protocol.
I know. I
mean, let me tell you something, dear. As someone who's owned an art gallery in the past, if someone were to leave my employ without my express permission, something would happen to their friends or family. I and my other petticoat girls would have taken them down faster than you can say, Bradley, Chadley, foot massage while I take these bitches down.
So everybody's at the benefit. Knockoff Christian Grey shows up. And yep. He starts yelling some stuff, but Will hears enough to know enough because guess what? Will and him used to go to the same schools together because Will used to actually have money, but now he doesn't have money anymore. So Knockoff Christian Grey talks to Will, and that's when Will turns to Cassie and he's like, is this true? About Secret setting up all these sexual fantasies. Is it true that Cassie went through it and was sleeping with all these men? Is it true that, like, you know, he was the end game of her 10-step program, as it were? Is all of this true? So that ends with them being broken up by the end of the second book.
Oh, no.
So in the third book, the only thing that Cassie has ever really wanted is Will for it, the love of her life. But when Will discovers Cassie is part of Secret, an underground group devoted to helping women experience their deepest sexual fantasies, Will breaks it off. Heartbroken, Cassie dries her tears and devotes herself to helping the latest Secret recruit, Salone Faraday. Now, Cassie is now joining the Council of Women, who they help. They're not just recruiting people or finding people who would benefit from this. They are organizing and setting up the scene for them. What they're also doing is screening and training the gentlemen who come in to do this, because the men are only allowed to stay for three. They're only allowed to be used three times. So in one instance, so Cassie actually recruits a young soccer player. Or is he a rugby player? I don't know. But recruits him. She tries to reignite a relationship with sexy bad boy Jesse from the first book, even if he can never love her as deeply as Will did. Now, Salone Faraday, she's a local news anchor and divorced mom. She has a great career, but a wilting love life. She is Black, comes up. So there you go. This is where we're starting to see. We're going to go full on diversity now, which has been quite the trend in romance and erotica, which is why I mention it, because it it's all at this point of like inclusion and stuff, which is great stuff, but it is fun to be like check mark, check mark, check mark as we go down the list of things you have to have. She's beautiful. Brilliant Salome, by the way. She gets to rekindle her long lost passions, but she's different than the other two. Like, this is a woman with a young teenage son. She maintains a relationship with her ex-husband because they're co-parenting. She has a very successful career. She knows what she wants. She knows what she's looking for. And she's going through all of these experiences. She also knows about the benefit from the second book. And she wants to interview knockoff Christian Grey because he famously never gives interviews. Anyway, that's when like the beat up happens and stuff. So Cassie, meanwhile, has been having, you know, some fun training the new recruits. She embarks in her first bisexual three-way, by the way. Gasp, shock and awe.
Oh, the horror.
She and Jesse try to make it work, but she overhears Jesse talking to, I guess, the head lady at Secret, who's an older woman, like in her 50s or 60s. Jesse's younger and has a kid. So she discovers that Jesse is in love with that woman and wants a relationship, and she has been resisting it. So, spoiler alert, those two end up getting together in the end, by the way.
Oh, my heavens.
So, but yeah, Cassie and Jesse kind of like break it off. They realize they're not going to get what they're looking for with each other.
But so congratulations to Grandma Plopwell. I hope she does really well with Jesse. And, yeah. You know.
She is Jesse's girl now.
And if I was Jesse's girl, if I was Jesse's girl.
What
a thankful girl I'd be.
So, meanwhile, Salome and her ex-husband, because they're obviously, you know, they're meeting up. He finally got one of his businesses to work, food trucks in New Orleans. He got it to work. He's seeing success. She's like, you know, established and has her success. And she starts to realize that she misses him. Mm-hmm. And it's implied that he's always missed her.
No.
So I'm going to talk about the ending for Salome before I get to Cassie, all right? So Salome, it ends up ending with her going and saying, I'm getting back together with my ex-husband. We're going to make this work. Thank you so much. And they're like, well, you still have one more fantasy. So they get to have a wedding thrown at the New Orleans estate, which, by the way, if you were having money problems, it's described in detail. This is a well-maintained historical New Orleans estate. Why did you never, ever think of renting it out for events? Why that was never a thought, don't know. But anyway.
Well, I mean, naturally, like, there are certain things, Heather, certain things, Mary, that you can do or not do. Okay, renting out a historical building for some cheap knockoff thrill to get your petty cash, Mary, is not one of them. There are ethics. There are morals. God, do you think you'd do anything for money? I thought this was all about the art, for heaven's sake.
By the way, the couple from the second book, Daphne and Mark, they show up because, you know, of course, Daphne's providing all of this fashion. Mark is the musician. And that brings us to Will.
Will is back.
Will and Cassie, they open the upstairs restaurant. Now, because of Secret and because Cassie's involved, many of these women are quite successful women. Obviously, this is what they do as a hobby. Of course, they have money to throw around. They all come to the opening. They make sure the right people come to the opening. So their restaurant area.
Oh, did the scruffy ruffians get in?
No, they don't. I'm sorry. So the restaurant area has an awesome, fantastic opening. In fact, he ends up catering the wedding.
No.
At the end. But here's the big shock. at one of the council meetings where everything's going on, they're like, we have a new recruit. I am going to Cassie. You will, I'm giving you a choice. You can either train him or understand that it will move to somebody else. And she's like, what? Why are you making a big deal about it? Opens up the file. It's Will. Will has volunteered to be like one of the gentlemen. And Cassie is being asked to train him for what would have been Salone's 10th event. And Cassie is like, this isn't fair, blah, blah, blah. And Head is like, you guys are broken up. We're all adults here. He said he wants to do it. We're all about consent. But understand that somebody else will be training him. So she has to do a training session with him in the private area ahem of the mansion, which of course is palatial and everything. The third book, you get to hear a lot about the private areas of the mansion. So
this is our 17th bathroom. We've had 63 sexual encounters in here. If you'll notice, so that cold water faucet is still the original 1793. Now, we did have to get the hot water faucet rejigged after somebody came in here and decided he wanted to live under the sea while plowing his woman into the back of the bathtub, but...
So, as, like, because they're with the restaurant together, the training session's coming up, obviously he... She's like, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Like, you broke up with me, blah, 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 blah. And
well,
he's
despite
like,
you, bitch.
No, well, actually, he's like, I want to understand. He also does apologize for her because it was mostly out of shock. He wasn't like meaning to come off as slut shamey or something like that. Also, remember, he and knockoff Christian Grey have bad blood. So I suppose finding out Cassie had slept with him was, you know, a bit of something, something. Remember, relationship drama. It oozes drama. I'm not even going into detail on the relationship drama. I'm just giving you the clip notes. So the training session comes up. She's really trying to like be this strong woman and being like, this is what's happening, blah, blah, blah. And the opening happens all wrong. He doesn't come in properly. He uses her name. She's like, no, you have to maintain in the fantasy, like go out, do it again. And then he's like, do you want me to go all the way out? Should I be knocking? And she's like, oh my God, just do it.
No. And just go out, knock and say, excuse me, miss, who are you again?
So,
that's when I tell you who I am. And then you go out and do it again. We do this about six more times.
So she, like, you know, loosely ties him to a chair because she's supposed to be like this powerful goddess Salone, right? Like, this is what I want. I'm having my time now. And it's not happening. And the emotions are coming up. And then she starts like crying and shaking because she's just like, why are you doing this? Why is this happening? And he's like, untie me. Let me talk to you. And he's like, I just wanted to understand and I wanted to show you that I'm open to this and I'm not trying to insult you and like I want you. You're what I want. After like everything, you're what I want. So they both go and they leave secret at that point as well, because you can't stay in, if you're planning to be in a monogamous relationship, you can't exactly stay in secret as like a training person and stuff like that. So that's the happy endings for everybody all round. Plot holes be damned. Ways to avoid drama be damned. It's definitely a fun read. It is very dramatic. Checks a ton of boxes.
What happened to Christian Grey?
He gives the ladies their painting back as well as like a bunch of money. And apologizes and says he'll do better. And that all happens like if this was a movie, it happens off camera. You hear about it. So it's like, we don't even get a redemption from him. Like, it's so obvious, like, fuck Christian Grey, send him away, blah, blah, blah. So there you go. So what do you think? Do you think you're going to start embarking on romance novel reading? and supporting Canadian authors.
So now that is just two entirely different questions right there.
Oh, no. It's one and the same. If you want to support Canadian authors, you need to read the smut that they write.
If you want to support the Canadian authors, you got to get down into the gutter. Reach for the smut and hold it deep to your penguin parts.
Is that what you're saying to me?
That's exactly what I'm saying to you.
Here's the thing. Number one, always support Canadian authors. I don't even care if you're outside of Canada. Support Canadian authors. That's one thing. But all of this three-story saga just feels like melodramatic crap.
It's so melodramatic.
And
it's harm-free drama. That's what you have to look at it as. I get to feed off of drama without ethically, because it's about fictional characters that don't matter. I don't have to feel bad for somebody's life or somebody's mental health. These are fake people.
I don't have to feel bad for it. Of course, naturally, I would never get into this situation. Come on, read to the end. Do you get back together with a guy or not? Okay, so there is hope for me and Jacob. I like werewolves.
Yeah, you're noticing that theme too.
Yeah.
It is very decidedly, they know, like Cassie and Jesse know they're not right. Like it's very established. Yep. These are the, like, you're the second choice type thing. It's not as though there's like an unrequited love triangle going on, which is, you know, refreshing, but also it means we don't get Brony Boy from 50 Shades of Earl Grey. So, I mean, take what you will.
I'm sorry, 50 Shades of Earl Grey, I would go out and I would read just for the absurdity of it. Like, if I had to read one of these for the channel,
Trained the Pacific Ocean for her.
Exactly.
The Pacific Ocean. He brought dinosaurs back.
That would be the one I would read. Like, honestly, if you could somehow get the rights so that we can do a live reading of 50 Shades of Earl Grey, I am totally down. This trilogy just doesn't do it for me.
It's too serious.
It's not that it's too serious. It's that it's too serious and it takes itself too seriously. Like, you are supposed to be able to connect to these characters and completely ignore every serviceable plot hole that moves its way up. At least with the parody one, the faults are so big and you can play into all of those faults to the point where everybody knows this is absurdist. And if you get off on this stuff, you get off on this stuff. It's I find especially
Nathan, are you kink shaming right now?
It's not that I'm kink shaming right now. You can have your kinks. I'm just telling you, this ain't it for me, sister. No, but the thing is, with parody, there's a big difference, because even if you did not tell me the synopsis of 50 Shades of Earl Grey, and trust me, thank you. But even from the back of that book, like, you could feel that something was off.
Oh, yeah.
And you could feel that. Yeah, you might be able to get off on this stuff, but you'll also be able to, if you don't subscribe to that specific kink, you can still read this book. You can still get a laugh out of it. This wants to take itself as the Young and the Restless. Canadian
Which
Young
is
and the Restless.
From yeah. I will say something that I did appreciate about it. So in my mind, if you are going to sell me a erotica book, a sex book, minimum 60% of the content should be sex. Minimum. Otherwise, it's not erotica. It's not a sex book. It's a book that has sex scenes.
A lot of the stuff that we have done and...
Yeah, so I will say there is a lot of drama, but there's also a lot of sex packed in, and it is concise. It's also from first person point of view, so it's a lot of action descriptions rather than, you know, we're going to pause and spend five pages describing a door. So I will say that for it. It's fun. It's silly. I like it because, again, it's an unconfirmed spite trilogy response to 50 Shades of Grey. So we all know about me and my soft spot for spite. Like, we all know.
It's monumental, okay?
Yeah.
This is someone who will get off on Kylo Ren and Rey not getting together. But not for the reason that you're thinking. Not that it narratively makes no sense, but all the pain of all of the people who shipped it.
I know.
As she gets to watch the theater, and like I wasn't even with you, but I can feel it. It's like, oh, the delicious irony hole heated up. Yum yum yum.
Yep. I was like, this is beautiful, beautiful. So yes, on that note, I know it's not a book that you're going to pick up, but when we talk about melodrama, what do you think about this for the melodrama?
Okay, as somebody who's listened to way more high school teenage girl stuff than I care to admit, I appreciate that you're going all melodrama. I appreciate that you know you're going to be attacked on several different plot holes. I can tell you I don't know enough history about how it came out. I know it's after 50 Shades of Grey, but I can tell you, if it is spite, I appreciate that it goes all out to be spite. Like, there is a difference between hating someone and hate fucking someone, and I feel like I feel like this is more hate fuck than hate. And I can appreciate it from that perspective, definitely.
So you could appreciate it. It's not for you.
No,
but you're not saying throw it on the fire. That's what we're hearing.
No. There are plenty of things inside of it. You can throw it on the fire. But if this is your sort of thing, by all means, get something else for kindling. Just don't touch 50 Shades of Earl Grey. That is that is an international treasure. I would advocate that should be taught in schools. Which schools, I don't know, but it definitely should be taught.
So, on that note, no, none of you listeners are going to realize this, but we like giving you some behind the scenes type stuff. So just so you know, we're going to be stopping recording and moving on to the next bit of torture I have for little Nathan Crabsworth over here. But we are always obligated to say, we love you, Jerry, our number one fan in Kazakhstan. Like, I think we might continue doing these sexy book reviews with you, actually, because I bet you Jerry loves hearing your reactions to things you will never read.
Thanks, Jerry. As always, I'm a huge fan.
We got to keep Jerry happy.
Yeah. You want to know what I think would be funny?
What?
And just hear me out on this. Okay. So you get a Zoom call together, okay? You get you get me, you get Shore, you get Eli.
Yes.
You know, all of you have worked much more significantly in those fields than I have.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find the most cliched smut you could possibly imagine that you guys could tolerate. And you guys defend it while I mercilessly attack it.
You know what? We'll keep that in mind.
Yeah,
I think that would be funny.
I think that would be fun.
Yeah. Anything you want to say to the people?
People, I don't know if you know this, but we're moving. we are moving to Spotify, if we're not there already, exclusively, and over on Death Pixie on YouTube. It's a new frontier for us. So if you like us on our Vimeo platform or wherever, you can now find us on YouTube. Hopefully all the stuff will be up there if we don't get copyright claim to high hell, but we'll cross those bridges when we come to it. It's an interesting step for us. I think it's the first step of what I hope to be something that's much, much bigger. It's a whole new frontier. We're happy to have you along for the ride.
If we are on Spotify by the time that this is broadcast, which I think we will be, migration happened well, so, you know, fingers crossed. Please, you know, like, subscribe, leave a comment. We can actually do that now? Yeah, so, you know, send us a message, leave a comment. Comments are a thing on Spotify. Also, we're going to be getting back into the Death Pixie Instagram, because Death Pixie is kind of the parent production company of Clam Jammers. So, you know,
yes, it is.
Check us out on Instagram. Get in there before we start getting more active. But yeah, other than that, thank you all for this wonderful ride and for coming along with us on this step forward.
Perfect. Thank you all so much.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Clam Jammers podcast. Check us out at clamjammers.ca for all your coven needs. Hello and welcome. Shut up, Grandpa!